Being neurodivergent is getting a lot more media exposure and understanding these days. It's said that between 15 to 20% of people, perhaps up to a quarter of the population, are in some category of neurodivergence, being autistic, having ADHD or dyslexia or OCD or unusual anxiety. There's a long list as well, which encompasses conditions such as Tourette's and dyspraxia. Often, people who are wired differently from the majority have above average intelligence and are gifted, but they also pay a price. Perhaps 5% of the population have ADHD and 1 to 2% a diagnosis of autism. Chanel Mariah has both conditions. The autism diagnosis came at age 21, and Chanel's book, I Am Autistic, was a top seller, and it won the New Zealand Society of Authors First Book Award in the New Zealand Book Awards last year. Now Chanel has written a follow-up. This is ADHD, an interactive and informative guide. Morena Chanel, good morning.
Good morning.
Congratulations on your latest book. This is ADHD.
Thank you.
It's great. And it's a very, very accessible book, isn't it? I suspect that was intentional.
Yes, very much.
Neurodivergent people can present as very neurotypical. Are you surprised when people are surprised by this?
Sometimes, yeah, but I think I'm so used to people not having a good understanding of neurodivergence that it doesn't really surprise me too much anymore. It's very frustrating because people think that a lot of us can't be neurodivergent because we look too normal, I suppose.
Before you were diagnosed and you couldn't officially put a name to how you experienced life, you weren't aware you were masking to fit in with the rest of society. How are you different?
I did not know I was masking. I just thought everyone did the same things I was doing. So constantly paying attention to all the little patterns and how people talk and what they say and when they say it and how they behave, what they're interested in. All of it's very conscious. My differences are, I do think very differently to a lot of people. I have a lot of strengths in problem solving, for example, but I also process things quite literally. I can be very hyperactive. I talk a lot and I talk very fast. There's so many things, right? Like I could go on for hours about how my brain is so different from everyone else and how hiding that for so many years because I thought it was normal, it was so exhausting.
Your new book, This is ADHD, who's it for?
I think pretty similar audience to I'm Autistic. There's the element of it being for people who have ADHD as a way to kind of process things and to feel less alone. For some, it's you're not yet diagnosed, so you're using it as a tool to figure out if it matches your circumstances. It's for parents or family to learn more about it. It's for people to say, hey, this is what I'm going through. Because a lot of the time it can be really hard to put it into words or put it into words that other people are going to understand. It can be very tricky if you're not neurotypical or if you're not neurodivergent, and can be hard to figure out the words that will cross that line well, and both sides can understand it.
Did your ADHD and autism diagnoses arrive at the same time?
No, so I got my autism diagnosis when I was 21. I was actually assessed for ADHD when I was maybe around 4 years old, but I was not given a diagnosis, even though I met the criteria. Instead, I was put into a gifted kids program. So I got my ADHD diagnosis officially almost exactly a year after my autism diagnosis.
And how did you feel when you got that diagnosis?
It's a bit tricky with that. My autism diagnosis came at a time when things were really, really bad. And so it was such a relief to me to have that diagnosis. And I kind of got to a point where I was feeling really hopeful because I was like, yes, all of this is just autistic burnout. It's going to get better. And then I got my ADHD diagnosis. And while there's nothing wrong with having ADHD, given my circumstances, it was quite a grieving process for that one. I think a lot of the times it's the opposite way around for people, right? They think that autism is a harder one to process, but I think it depends on your circumstances. And it's perfectly okay to have a grieving process for any of them or neither of them. I do think it's important, though, to come to terms with it. I'm quite happy with who I am and I wouldn't change it. But yeah, it was a little bit hard to process that one.
Because it was a lot of information explaining you to yourself, what could you talk a little further about the grieving process?
I think because with the autism diagnosis, prior to that, my mental health was very, very bad because I was so badly burnt out. And so my autism diagnosis saved my life. I was feeling really hopeful. I had the tools to improve my life and I was feeling good. I thought, you know, everything's going to get better. It's going to be okay. And then I got my ADHD diagnosis. And one of the things that are quite common with ADHD is depression. And there's not a lot you can do about that. It's just because of the lack of dopamine. And that's always going to be how my brain works. And that's okay. I can find tools and strategies to work around it. But I think it was a little bit of a bummer to realize that part of it isn't going to get easier, like completely. Like I'd still have to have tools and strategies in place for it.
Is it straightforward to be tested or to get a test for ADHD? How does that part work?
It's definitely not straightforward, especially if you are an adult who's managed to fall through the cracks your whole life, and particularly if you are a female or assigned female at birth or of a minority group. Really, any sort. As long as, if you're not a white male, it's very hard to get diagnosed. You often do need parental involvement, which some of us don't have. If you've not been diagnosed, there's often a lot of tension in families. So that can be really hard to get. And then the whole stigma side of things, people don't want their children to have labels like that. And so getting your parent to agree to provide that information is not always easy. It's also very costly. You can be paying more than $1,500 to get an assessment. And then you still have to find a psychiatrist, and they're so busy. So getting a psychiatrist appointment is very, very difficult.
Hi, RNZ National. I'm speaking with Chanel Mariah, who has written the book, This is ADHD, an interactive and informative guide. Chanel, with ADHD, many people think they have a good idea of what the condition is. Do they?
No. So a lot of people think that ADHD is like a loud child who's impulsive and disruptive and very hyperactive. I still hear a lot of people say, oh no, I can't have ADHD because I'm not hyperactive. But there are so many different ways that ADHD can present. For me, for example, my hyperactivity comes out in my talking. I'm not running around all the time. And impulsivity can change, and that's only one type of ADHD. There's also so much more to it. I have over 70 different topics in my book regarding ADHD and what it is and how it might impact a person's life. Things like rejection-sensitive dysphoria, for example, or which is difficulty dealing with perceived rejection. A sensitivity to criticism because of the number of labels we receive throughout our life. So things like being called lazy, because we have poor executive functioning. Executive functioning is like having difficulty putting steps in order, or we have a lot more steps to things. So sometimes it's a lot harder for us to actually get started on things. And so then we're just seen as lazy because we're not getting up. Meanwhile, we're doing everything in our power to get ourselves to get up and get started. I do wish more people knew the extent of what ADHD is, because it's very hard receiving all of those negative labels your whole life when actually it's just who you are and there's so many ways to work around it.
How easy is it to get good information and also support?
I mean, with any neurodivergent condition, right, it's really hard to get good information because a lot of it is written from a very deficit-based perspective, which is not going to really help anyone in the long run. And support is very limited, especially for adults and for ADHD. ADHD isn't really considered something that needs a lot of support in most cases. Like with autism, I can get support. ADHD, I cannot, even though I'd say my ADHD is the cause of me actually needing support. Yeah.
And you can't because it's not recognised. Why can't you get support for ADHD?
So, I mean, because of my autism diagnosis, I qualify for 5 hours of support each week. My support worker helps me with things like groceries and cooking and cleaning. My issue and struggle with cooking and cleaning is not because I'm autistic. It is because I have ADHD. But ADHD isn't recognized in that system in order to access support. It's not considered, I suppose, severe enough to require support, even though that's really what is making those things hard for me. Yeah, I think we've still got a long way to come in terms of recognizing what's a disability and how those disabilities affect different people and whether or not they should qualify for different support. It can be very challenging on that front.
Let's talk about the book. It looks great and it's very interactive. Can you tell us why the illustrations, for example, are important?
The illustrations in my books are designed to break up the text. For someone who has ADHD, it can be very hard to keep track of where you're up to, and especially if there's a lot of text and it's you can just read things in the wrong order and it makes no sense. So the illustrations are there to break it up into smaller sections. I've also used the colours to do that as well. So using the colours in ribbons to break up the text into smaller sections to keep track of where you are on the page.
It's so helpful. And it's really nice that you can write notes and actually answer questions in the book too. That's important, isn't it?
Yeah, it's actually been quite interesting. A lot of people are hesitant to write in the book. With the first one, I tried to make it kind of messy so people would feel okay to write in it, and that didn't work, so that's okay. People use post-it notes, and they do what works for them.
Can we talk about the traits of ADHD? Could you give some, like, I don't know if a summary is the right way to go. I'm trying to find good words too. I'm thinking about people who are listening and may have a sense or even a realisation that this could include them, but they haven't been diagnosed. I'm not saying that we're diagnosing anyone. It's more just to think about behaviours or things that you'd like us to be aware of, because I feel like your book is very much about sharing information that we actually simply don't know.
Yeah, I think one thing I wish people understood more is that a lot of people with ADHD are really good at the hard things and not so great at the easy things. And that doesn't mean that it's wrong. It doesn't mean that we need to be belittled for the things we can't do or have people look at the things we can't do and assume we can't do anything harder than that. A lot of that comes down to where our interest lies. So people with ADHD have low levels of dopamine. Dopamine is our happy motivation hormone. So when you have low levels of dopamine, it can be really hard to do pretty much anything. But if you're interested in something, it triggers a release of dopamine, which makes you motivated to do that task. So I can write and illustrate an entire book in 6 weeks. It can take me 4 days to do a few dishes. But a lot of the time people would look at that and go, oh, they can't do dishes. They can't manage a job. Where in reality, I'm actually really good at some things that other people might find very, very difficult. Also, a lot of people with ADHD might be good in crisis or emergency for the same reason, because in crisis and emergency, our adrenaline levels rise to what would be typical in other people, which means it's easier for us to focus and get tasks done when other people might be panicking.
Could we talk about body-focused repetitive behaviours? Is that the phrase?
Yep, so there is body-focused repetitive behaviours. It's not strictly ADHD. People getting fixated and losing track of time, because we do lose track of time.
Yes, actually, let's talk about that, because I found that tool of the six things. Could you explain that more? I thought that was very, very helpful. I have a forgetfulness issue, and anyone who knows me knows this as part of my character at this point. Could you talk more about forgetfulness and that tool of the six things?
Yeah, so forgetfulness, I mean, there's a lot of things that come into forgetfulness. Sometimes it's if we can't see something, we can't remember it. This makes grocery shopping really hard because I can't figure out what I need because I can't see it because I don't have it. Forgetfulness in terms of appointments, again, it's a concept you can't see, so it's hard to remember it. My six items thing is to make it easier for me to remember the things I need to leave the house. So I don't need to know exactly what those six items are. I don't need to go phone, lanyard, headphones, watch. I just count. I count the six items and I make sure I know where they are. And if I can't count six items, I know I'm missing something. And I don't necessarily need to leave the house with all six items, but I do have to account for them, which makes it easier for me if I'm going, okay, six items plus my laptop. Then I only have to remember one item, because as long as all six items are accounted for, it's just one item that I have to remember, that, like, the actual what it is. If that makes sense.
It does to me. And also forgetting about what's in the back of the fridge. Why does that happen?
That's also the object permanence side of things. So if you can't see it, you forget it exists. I do this all the time. If I can put food in the oven, once I can't see the oven anymore, I'm going to forget it's in there, which becomes a safety hazard, which is why I need a support worker. It's just harder for us to remember things that we can't see. We have good, I suppose, long-term memory. Our working memory is where we might have some struggles.
It can be frustrating to text someone with ADHD, I've heard. I've not had this experience myself. What are some of the things that are going on there?
Sometimes it's that we open the message, we can't respond right then, and so we close the message, but then there's no longer a notification, so we forget that there was a message to begin with. Sometimes it's that we just get too overwhelmed with the messages, so we don't reply, or we start typing response, we get distracted, and then we forget we were typing response, so we don't respond. So it can be frustrating if you've tried to contact someone and they're just not getting back to you. And honestly, it's fine to just send another message, because otherwise you might never hear back.
Exactly. And having trouble sleeping is another thing that's quite common. How do you deal with that?
I take melatonin at night times, and I do try and follow a bit of a routine of trying to get off my devices at night, because melatonin responds to light stimulation. So if you're off your devices, it's more likely that the melatonin is going to work for that, but that's not an option for everyone. Some people with ADHD need stimulation to fall asleep, and to a degree, I'm the same. I cannot sleep if it's pitch black. I have to have a light on somewhere, and I have a galaxy projector, and I just watch it move around. Some people fall asleep watching TV shows because that's how their brain unwinds. Some of us, caffeine makes us sleepy. I'm not recommending having caffeine at night, but for some of us, that's actually how we get to sleep. We have a cup of coffee and go to sleep.
The motivation to write your book, Chanel, and now it's here, and it's not just for people who have ADHD or may think they've got ADHD. It's also for families and friends and just everybody, really, to understand neurodivergence. Is society...
I think the more we understand neurodivergence, the more we can utilise that in society and make things more accommodating for everyone. It's not just neurodivergence or neurodivergent people who need those accommodations. There are so many people who can benefit from the different ways we treat people, or treating people as individuals rather than expecting them to fit into what we determine is the correct way of doing things or the correct way of succeeding.
Really good talking with you this morning, Chanel. Thank you so much for the insights, and congratulations again on your second book.
Thank you.